While we're on the subject of being broke and white in America, let's add another adjective to that list: minority. According to the U.S. Census Bureau, by 2042, white Americans of European descent will make up less than half of the population. In other words, white people will soon be a minority. Philosopher Linda Martine Alcoff has been thinking about the coming demographic change. She's the author of a new book called The Future of Whiteness. And she told Steve Paulson it's time to grapple with what it means to be white in the first place.
The major thing is that whiteness is a historically produced category.
This is not a biological category. This is a historical construction.
Totally historical, and it's changeable, it's fluid, its boundaries have moved, but it was useful. I don't think it's just something people on the ground accepted because the state told them to. It was useful for cross-ethnic European immigrants to have a category that would make sense of their experience, and their experiences were different than those who faced chattel slavery or who were indigenous to the Americas. So it was a useful category, and that's why it got used on the ground. And it continues to be a useful category to mark the differences of the experience of white European Americans in the United States, their history, the current material distributions, and the way they interact with others and the animosity and distrust they may feel from others. There's a distinctness to whiteness.
Does white only have meaning when contrasted with say, black or brown?
All identity terms are always relational and comparative. That doesn't make whiteness distinct. But I think that there is a substantive content to whiteness beyond the comparison. And that has to do with the particular experience of immigration from Europe that most whites experienced, and the particular relationship that whites have to histories of slavery and annexations of land and genocides of peoples, etc. So the production of shame and guilt and the tendency toward denial and avoidance is something that's fairly specific to white people in the United States, different from other people who have different relationships to those large events of history.
You've titled the introduction to your book, The Unbearable Whiteness of Being. What exactly is the unbearable part of this?
When you face the truth of the history of countries like the United States, it's pretty hard to take. You know, not only there was this terrible histories of slavery and genocide, but there were also connected to that a set of advantages, economic advantages particularly, but also political advantages that were set aside for white populations that explain the material differences between white and black and brown communities today. So what do you do with that, right? I mean, what do you do with that if you're a young person and you didn't live in those times, but...
Well, you're basically asking, do you have to feel guilty about it if you're white? I mean, basically for having these privileges that would seem to be undeserved. I mean, the product of historical circumstances that happened centuries ago.
And this is not unique. The German nation has had to deal with this. The Japanese have had to deal with this. The Rwandan government is taking some steps around this. There's a number of places in the world that have had to deal with terrible histories and are grappling with it in different ways. I think guilt and shame are logical outcomes. I don't think they're mistakes. I think that it makes sense. The question is, what do you do with them? How do you craft a different kind of society so that you can hold your head up and be part of a positive coalition that really respects freedom and equality and the sorts of things the United States says it respects? How do you help to bring that about as a white person?
Let's bring this to the politics of the present. A lot of people say the rise of Donald Trump shows that many white Americans feel really insecure already about losing their social status, losing their power. Do you see it that way?
Yes, I do think that that has everything to do with the current election. The left and the progressives and the liberals have largely abandoned the white poor and the white working class. They haven't spoken to them directly about their particular circumstances and have left them to the forces of the right wing, who have articulated an answer to the problems that the white poor and the white working class experience in their daily lives.
Aren't these the groups that white liberals are supposed to be representing, the poor?
Yes, but they don't. I mean, you can look at the policies of the Clinton administration and see that there was no bite behind that rhetoric. And they haven't, you know, really addressed it directly to talk about. I think people are afraid to talk about whiteness. They'll talk about other racial groups, but to talk about whiteness, there's been a lot of avoidance. And I think there's also a lot of scapegoating, actually, of the white poor, that this is where the racism lies. It doesn't lie with the elite. It's a problem of Joe Sixpack, which is the majority of white people. So they've really been abandoned. And there's some political theorists today who are arguing overtly for that abandonment, that we can win elections with an alliance of people of color and educated whites, and we don't need to address the white poor, the white working class, which is abandoning their economic plight as not meriting our attention and abandoning sort of their sense of who they are in the country and their sense of their place inside a progressive coalition.
What would it mean to address that?
It would mean to talk to white workers and the white poor directly as whites, to address the problems of race and racial identity with them directly. What's going on in the current election is that white workers have, you know, unions have declined. They no longer have a space in their unions for being sort of political participants, for having a voice, for having any kind of democratic say over their lives. So class solidarity is just a non-starter. There's just no place to really enact class solidarity for whites. So they have replaced it with race solidarity as a way to try to protect their interests and take care of themselves.
Well, the title of your book is The Future of Whiteness. And as we've already said, white Americans will soon be in the minority. What do you see as the future of being white in America?
Well, I don't think the hysteria is going to die down anytime soon. I think there will be an ongoing polarization among whites themselves over how to address the demographic changes. There'll be organizing on the right, but also an increasing disaffection for many whites about illusions of the past. I think there's a lot of young white people in particular who just don't buy the kind of vanguard view that white people are the vanguard of the human rights. They just don't buy it anymore. And so they're trying to figure out where they stand. I'm very interested to see how they solve that question. That's going to be the answer to your question, I think, is the historical events.
That's Linda Martine Alcoff. She's the author of The Future of Whiteness, and Steve Paulson talked with her.